Hello, everyone. This is Nicholas Katman with the FDA Group. Welcome to the Life Science Rundown. Before we jump into our discussion for today, just a little bit about what the FDA Group does. We help life science companies in the areas of quality assurance, regulatory affairs, clinical operations, commissioning, qualification, and validation, as well as manufacturing and engineering. We offer three different engagement models, consulting, staff augmentation, and full-time employee recruitment. So if you ever find yourself in need, just head over to thefdagroup.com, check us out, and get in touch. Today, I am speaking with Dan Barker, who is the CEO of Wikimotive. And Dan, thanks for hopping on with me.
Nick, thank you so much for having me on and the invite. It's greatly appreciated, and I certainly always enjoy a conversation with you, so I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. So on the Life Science Rundown, we sometimes talk about technical issues related to our industry. I am very passionate about leadership and management, so I think it's interesting because a lot of the people that listen to the technical part do have teams that they have to lead and manage. And so in addition to the technical part, I always like to get some insight as it pertains to leadership and management. And, you know, hopefully some people get some benefit out of it. So before we hop into that, could you introduce yourself and your company?
Yeah, certainly. So as you said, my name is Dan Barker. I'm CEO for Wikimotive. We are about as far away from what you do as could possibly be imagined. We're a digital marketing agency that serves automotive dealers all across the United States and Canada. So effectively, if I was to break that down, what we do is help car dealers show up higher on Google than their competition. We're here to help them sell more cars is really what we specialize in.
Very cool. Well, you know my background from being, and just for everybody's background, I know Dan because we both belong to the same CEO peer group, which is Vistage. And I know on at least one occasion I've kind of talked to you about my background story, which is pretty unusual. And I think it's interesting to kind of talk about people's background stories because before I became CEO, I always thought that people, you know, went to business school and they created this big plan and they got investment. And I found out that's not always the case. So could you tell me a little bit about your background and how you got to this point in your career?
Yeah, I think I used to be under the same illusions. I used to be under the illusion that business success was for those classically trained with long pedigree and a whole bunch of certificates on a wall. And mine is pretty non-typical, I would say, as well. My background, I'm a trained cabinet maker. You know, I spent my younger years coming up through my stepfather's shop and learning how to be a cabinet maker. Again, moved past his shop to a much larger company in central Massachusetts, where I did everything from making cabinets to installation work to eventually design, CAD work, engineering, and then shop foreman and some management positions later on. I have a passion for building things, I guess is what you could say, and always have. I like problems and challenges. That eventually led me to looking at an industry that I viewed as it would be really easy to be a dinosaur in the millwork industry. It's not exactly at the forefront of innovation or cutting edge, and I knew I wanted more than to just kind of manage a shop. So I decided to make an unusual jump into the marketing realm. I started with I took a big step back and started with Wikimotive coming up on 5 years ago now, running the content operations for, at the time, what was a 6-7 person company, you know, not a very big company at all, and ran the content operations before taking over the director of operations role and then the COO role 2 years ago. And now as of the first of the year, CEO for the company. So yeah, definitely not a typical path for most people.
Well, congratulations on your promotion. And No, it just it's nice to see people that are able to climb the corporate ladder and be able to achieve what you've achieved in 5 years. So that's really
I appreciate
cool.
It. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. And I would say Vistage and you know, I would say even mentorship from someone like you, I value our time together and some of the things, your perspectives on things has actually gone a long way in that process. So I'd like to actually thank you as well.
Cool. Well, that's probably a good transition into the next topic, which is leadership and management. So when you think about leadership and management, what does it mean to you? What are kind of some of the aspects of leadership and management that kind of jump out at the forefront and kind of create your vision for what it should be?
Yeah, I think management's the easy side of that one, in the sense that it's the systems and the processes that we put in place to do whatever it is that we're supposed to do as a business. It's the structure, it's the nuts and bolts that allow us to make sure we get the job done, and then measure how well we did it. I think for a long time, I really conflated management and leadership as they're one in the same. And it's only been over the past 5 or 6 years that I've realized how different that is. As naive as that probably sounds, but management is the thing that you can learn from a book, and it's how to get the job done and measure how well you did it. You know, leadership, I think is, you know, I guess there's an awful lot of ways out there that leadership has been described. The way I look at it, when I think about it at its core is it's making sure that we do all the management things. And we build those systems and we build those processes and we build them with people instead of on top of people, right? I don't know if that quite makes sense, but
they're supposed to empower, not cause obstacles.
I think that's exactly it. It's easy to be successful when you're stacking people up and you're standing on top of them. Leadership is grabbing everybody and getting them to go where we all need to go for not just the company's benefit, not just my benefit, but you know, their benefit too. I think that's an important part or an important aspect to me. You know, it's leadership, but there's also an aspect of, as we go through running a business and we go through the day-to-day existence and trials and tribulations, that I am who I want to be as a human being on the other side when we make it through all of those things. I think that's kind of how I look at that. That's maybe not a typical way, but I think that's an important part to me.
One thing I heard you say, which was interesting, is you said, as naive as it sounds, you know, you realize that they're two separate things. And one of the things that I've learned as I've evolved in my leadership and management is, at a certain part, you feel like an imposter. You're put in a leadership and management position, and you're really just trying to fake it till you make it. And you look at all the other people, and you see that they have more knowledge than you have. And there's a little bit, at least for me, a little sense of shame that I don't already know everything that they know. And you want to get there, but I guess that's kind of the reality of leadership and management. Is it's just like almost everything in life, it's not a destination, it's a journey. And so as soon as us as leaders and managers get to that level, we found somebody else that's even more insightful as it pertains to leadership and management. And then we go right back to questioning ourselves, you know, why aren't we at that level? But over time, we kind of get there. So, with your evolution as becoming a leader and manager, what are some of the points that you've learned, whether it's mistakes that you've made that you learned from, or kind of some unique insights that you were able to borrow and implement into your daily activities?
Yeah, I don't think we have enough time in this to go over all the mistakes. So in all seriousness, I think the biggest thing, the single biggest thing, the biggest mistake I've made, And the thing that held me back the longest was not realizing exactly what you just said, that management and leadership are not a destination. You don't just get there and go, well, thank God I'm here. I finally found it. And it's this, you know, beautiful oasis of everything that you thought it should be. It doesn't exist like that. It's the same struggle. It's the same. I think viewing it as a destination and viewing everything as mechanical algorithms to be run. Like there's a lot, I think to be a good leader, you have to often look inward to say, what can I do better? How can I improve? How can I be a better, I view it this way. How can I be a better servant to the people that work for me? And how can I continue to bring them up? How can I see a different side of a situation or a perspective that I don't have experience with? And I think it's okay. I think it's learning to be okay with the fact that you're not ever going to be complete. You're not ever going to be all the way there. And just keep putting one foot in front of the other. I'm not sure if that answers what you're exactly asking, but I think that's the way I really view is what took me the longest and what was my probably biggest failure, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I think the word that you used that I really liked is being a servant to your people. And I think that's really a good mindset. I would say that brings you into the growth mindset, which is we know that it's a journey and not a destination. So by understanding that you're meant to serve others, you can kind of measure their quality of work, speed of work, value of work, happiness. I mean, we can go on and on of your people. And that's really a benchmark for how we can measure ourselves as leaders and managers. So,
yeah.
You know, as I've evolved as a leader and manager, you know, I not only do I look back at some of the mistakes that I've made, but I also look back at some of the things that I've done as a leader and manager that I'm really proud of. So what would you say as a leader and a manager that you would find is something that you're most proud of?
I would be kidding myself or I would be disingenuous if I was to say I wasn't proud of things like some of the success that we've had recently, the way we've grown Wikimotive. I would say those are things that I don't run around with. I don't print a billboard. It's not, there's no numbers over my shoulder. But those are things that I'm very deeply proud of. I've been around long enough to know that all those things don't last for very long, and they're a temporary, fleeting moment of success. Because as soon as you you reach that next sales goal, you reach that next department goal or whatever, there's another one there to be followed up on. I think if I was to think of something that I'm the most proud of, it would be the instances in which I know I've been a small part of making a difference in someone else's life that works for me or even that I've worked with over the years. I think it's not like me to say bold things, but I think I've been a leader a lot longer than I knew what a leader was. And I take a lot of pride in someone hitting me up years after I've worked with them. I wasn't even their boss at the time, but we've had long conversations on a direction for their career or things that they should do. And I spent a lot of time with these people and to see them succeed and have them call me back years later and say, you know, thank you for helping me through that or getting the opportunity to mentor a few of the leaders that we have, future leaders that we have here at the company. When I get excited or when I get really proud of something that I feel like I've done or been a part of, I really think it's that. I think those are the things that I remember because I don't view those as fleeting moments. Those are moments and instances of people's lives being changed for the better. All while we get to make money and be a business, like, you know, there's of course that side of things as well, but to do that and to be a business and get paid for all the things that we're doing is really an amazing thing.
Yeah, well, it goes to Maya Angelou's quote that You won't remember what they did for you, but you'll remember how they made you feel.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, there are managers and people who claim to be leaders that have, I would say, the wrong attitude toward leadership and management, and they don't get to appreciate the moments that I believe good leaders and managers are able to appreciate, which is, you know, again, if we subscribe to the idea that we're servants, then our job as servants is to enhance people's quality of life. Yep. And I can speak for myself that when I see somebody buy a second home or a bigger home or a new car or go on a week-long vacation or have a little breathing room so that they can do X, Y, and Z in their life, you know, those are the moments that really make a difference for me, right? Because, yes, it's good to grow a business and make money, right? But there's more to being a leader and manager, and I think that's important for us to kind of shine a light on that. You know, so we implemented EOS, and one of the things that in the beginning stages of EOS is the implementer said, "Nick, do you get a case of the Mondays?" And I said, "No, actually, I don't get a case of the Mondays." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, I know that every day I'm improving people's lives, whether it's my employees or contractors or clients or whomever. So I think kind of what you describe is, you know, something that you're really proud of. I think that's what gets us up every morning."
Yeah, it does.
And being enthusiastic about what we do. So I think it's important to highlight that.
Yeah, I agree. It is the thing that makes a lot of the other stuff sitting in the chairs that we have to, that we get to occupy, really worthwhile and really, really worth looking back on. I agree.
So in that same breath, as we were talking, you know, I kept getting flashes of different anecdotes in my head, you know, like the Maya Angelou quote, or you know, the little anecdote about why do I wake up with a case of the Mondays or lack thereof, right? So what are some of the special anecdotes or lessons that you can remember hearing over the course of your career that you still latch on to and say it's a card in your back pocket that you pull out every so often?
I think I don't know that I have a good anecdote. I know someone a long time ago once told me that my best and worst quality was a willingness to be vulnerable. I think maybe I'm going in a different direction than what you're thinking, but I think that comment has stuck with me for a long time, and it is some of my best and worst qualities, to a willingness to be vulnerable, a willingness to put myself out there for my benefit or others' benefit, or as a learning process, or to show who I am, even to my own detriment, I'm an emotional person. I often say you probably won't have to work here very long before you see me emotional in some way, shape, or form. Not angry. That's the last thing I ever am. But I am absolutely not afraid to shed a tear when I see someone else succeed here or that's in my life. Or I think that's an interesting thing to explore, in the sense that there's a thought that those who are in charge are supposed to be these stoic, you know, I do it by the book and I sit in the big office and there's a component of that, but I think a willingness to be human a willingness to be really happy for the people that are here, for our successes, a willingness to show when I'm disappointed or frustrated or any of that. I think that's something that I've leaned into more and more over the years, for better or worse.
Well, that word vulnerable is certainly hits a button for me, because I'm a big fan of Brené Brown, and she became famous from doing a TED Talk on vulnerability, and it was one of, if not the most viewed TED Talk ever. And she's written numerous books. The book that I most recently read of hers was Dare to Lead. And it's a very good book about being vulnerable. And I think what it does, and we've been kind of a little bit vulnerable on this call, because we talked about how our backgrounds were unusual, and how we feel like we're at moments in time where we're supposed to know everything and we don't. And then once we know that, then you find something else that you don't know. And so, you know, and it's always, it's again, never a destination, always a journey. And one of the things that I've found that's kind of helped me in growing my leadership and management is just this constant learning, right? And so I mentioned the book of Brené Brown that I read quite a while ago, but I try to read a lot on the topic, because some of them are very transformational and I get a lot out of them. Some are maybe not as transformational, but at least I get some kind of nuggets that I can use and implement. So do you have any books that you've read that you think are beneficial?
Well, you just gave me a new one to add to my list. So I have at least that. I look forward to reading that. I'll be honest, I don't often read anymore. I often listen.
Let me say that I don't actually read. I listen to them on Audible. I say read because I still get the content. Now, the interesting thing is, I have a very difficult time reading. And when I was in college, I was a history major, so I had to read like 9 books every semester. I was very slow, and I had to go, you know, I'd read 10 pages and I'd have to go back. And then I found out I'm not an idiot. I'm just an auditory learner. So listening is fine. That's what I do.
There are times where, depending on the content, I will actually listen to the book, buy the paper version, and then highlight so that I have a thing to go back to. Because I think it comes from the days in the cabinet shop, or really the engineering department and drafting of you print out your drawing set and then you redline, you view it out in the real world. And there's still a tangible component for that, to that for me. James Clear's Atomic Habits was a favorite of mine.
I read that book. That was good.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good, that's actually one my wife and I are planning on rereading together. Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules, a bunch of self-help books, a lot of podcasts. I'm currently reading, I really like Simon Sinek's stuff. I'm reading, I don't know how I'm just reading it now, but I'm reading or listening to Start With Why now. I'm just started that one this morning. But a lot of those concepts are, you know, I'll also go off and read, when I think of leaders, I think of Dick Winters, the Band of Brothers lore from, you know, the series on HBO and World War II. I will read military books from time to time, all sorts of stuff. So I think stuff that... Any way to get a perspective or a view into things that I wouldn't normally have experience with, or a depth of information that I wouldn't be able to gain otherwise, is usually of interest to me.
Yeah, well, I think Simon Sinek has definitely made a lot of inroads into the community of leaders and managers that are constant learners, and Start With Why is definitely a fundamental book as I understand it. I didn't read it primarily because when he became popular, I became obsessed with his content and I followed him on YouTube. So I was constantly listening to him. So I felt like I got a lot out of that. Atomic Habits is a great book. I read that as well. The other thing that I really enjoy is when I can read a book that's new, you know, because sometimes I read Jim Collins' Good to Great, and that was a very, very good book, although it was a little difficult to read because he kept referring to great companies like Radio Shack and Fannie Mae.
They're doing a great job, aren't they?
It's a little outdated, but Atomic Habits is a new book. You know, I think there's two things I want to say on that. One is I love the name because Atomic is a reciprocal of itself, if I'm using the, or an oxymoron, because atomic meaning small changes can lead to atomic big outcomes. And I really like that. And then I think in his book, he has the story about the English cycling team for the
Sky cycling.
What do they call that famous race?
Tour de France. A huge Tour de France fan.
And then he looked at every aspect of these people's lives up to the thread count in their sheets. Because if that thread count could get them five more minutes of extra sleep, you know, what is that when we're talking about fractions of a second, what can that do? And it's very interesting because one of the, you know, anecdotes that I've held for my entire life came from my father. And he said, Nick, you don't have to do a lot more than everybody else. You just have to do a little more. And so when I look at myself as a leader or manager, I look at the FDA group as a company, I try to figure all of the different touch points and see where is that baseline and what could we do to make it just a little bit better and a little bit better.
Right? The stacking of fractional gains is once would have been considered, why the heck would we waste any time for, you know, half of 1%, but you stack a whole bunch of those half of 1% together and you provide a system to be able to support that structure. And man, can it make a difference. And I loved his analogy of the Sky cycling team. That was a great example.
And I have to admit, when we're talking about fractions of fractions and fractions of percents, I can't help but think of Office Space.
That's funny.
So, all right. Well, before we end the call, and this has been fantastic. I really, really appreciate it. What advice would you give to other leaders and managers as we wrap things up?
I think I would go back to, and the one that I have given is it's probably not universal advice. I think it's that embrace the idea of being vulnerable with others, being vulnerable with yourself, right? We don't all have everything that we need right now. You know, you're not born with it. You're not. Be vulnerable. Admit. Be willing to admit to yourself. You're what you're afraid of. Where you fall short on things. Where you want to go with things. Your hopes. Your aspirations. Embrace the vulnerability of being human. I think is an important concept. I can't think of any leader that I've ever aspired to be like that didn't have some level of willingness to be vulnerable in front of others. And I think that's it's not something that's often discussed, although apparently it is in large circles, because apparently I missed a major TED talk. But I think that's really solid advice, and I think it's not one that is really focused on, because that's a skill, being learning how to be vulnerable and a willingness to do so is something I think we can all embrace, and we'd all be better for it.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And vulnerability, I think, is an expression of humility. And when you're able to express yourself as a humble person, I think it adds trust and credibility to the people that you're trying to lead and manage. Yeah. So that's great. Well, Dan, I really appreciate it. This was fantastic. For everybody that's listening, if you happen to be in the automotive business and you want to sell more vehicles, please head over to wikimotive.com and get in touch with them. As always, if you find conversations like this valuable, please share it with a colleague or your professional network. If you haven't already, subscribe to get updates of new episodes at the FDAgroup.com/podcast and follow the FDA Group on LinkedIn. If you'd like to connect about project or resource needs, head over to the FDAgroup.com to get in touch, or feel free to connect with me personally on LinkedIn. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone, and we'll see you next time.